Well, thanks, Jack, for that enthusiastic and personal welcome. And I've done this before publicly, but I want to repeat my thanks to Jack Nguyen for his gracious assistance in helping me with my transition back to Atlanta and to the Fed. We had many conversations, and they were all quite helpful. So thank you, Jack. I joined the club a month ago, and I have the badge here to prove it. And I can't help but wonder if it's part of the club's rites of initiation that a new member must get up in front of the membership and talk about something that affects everyone's life vitally, about which there are many strongly held and conflicting opinions, and at a juncture at which the outcome is excruciatingly uncertain. In other words, an initiation with the potential for maximum embarrassment. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking it's our tradition. Welcome to the club, Lockhart. You know, all the speech coaches, when they prepare you for dealing with an audience like this, give various kinds of advice. One is to imagine your audience naked. It doesn't help. While it may seem like a rough initiation to make a speech on the economy during my first month of membership, I'm really quite honored to join this group, this distinguished group, and I'm happy to uphold this Rotary Club of Atlanta tradition. At this date on the calendar, in early January, it's natural to take stock and think of the year ahead. In my remarks today, I plan to provide a brief summary of last year's economic story and an outlook for the year ahead. And I will also share some of my personal views on Fed monetary policy during this difficult time of economic and financial transition. I'll tell you up front that my message will be a sober one, but I hope that it won't prevent you from inviting me back next year, right or wrong. All my comments, I should say, are my views alone, and they don't represent the views of my colleagues on the Federal Open Market Committee. I hesitate to use that word, committee. Let me begin by taking you back to a year ago. As 2006 turned into 2007, the economic environment appeared relatively benign. I would say even when I began in March and first got my briefings on the economy seemed relatively benign compared to today. However, we now know that housing activity, measured by housing starts, by sales, by permits, and by prices, began to slip in late 2005. By midsummer 2006, the FOMC, Federal Open Market Committee, began noting the cooling of the housing market. The decline in housing activity coincided with a notable slowdown of economic growth through the end of 2006 and into the first part of 2007. Throughout 2007, forecasts of housing activity were repeatedly revised downward. Despite the intensifying housing correction, as we call it, the economy grew smartly last spring and summer. U.S. gross domestic product, GDP, grew at annual rates of 3.8% in the second quarter and the very strong 4.9% in the third quarter of 2007. But those strong numbers contain certain anomalous factors that probably won't be repeated again. Taking out an inventory buildup and exports, third quarter growth was moderate, about half the GDP headline number. Fourth quarter data isn't yet available, but I expect growth during the final 3 months of 2007 to come in quite sluggish. Evidence of slowing economic activity has been mounting. Beyond last year's sharp drop in residential investment, industrial production growth, remained well below its rate, and I say industrial production growth, remained well below its rate of the previous year. The data in 2007 showed moderate growth of investment in equipment and software. Anecdotal reports suggest that many firms have begun, especially in the second half, to assume a wait-and-see posture because of rising economic uncertainty. Also, over the past 20 months or so, year-over-year employment growth has slowed considerably. Readings on December employment were released last Friday, showing a small monthly increase of only 18,000 jobs, with the unemployment rate moving up from 4.7% to 5%. Consumer spending is watched closely because of the role of current consumption in our economy. Through November, last year's growth in personal consumption expenditures fell off the pace of 2006, which in turn was below the pace of 2 years ago. Also in 2007, growth of real disposable personal income slowed a bit. Household spending has likely been weighed down by higher energy costs and, in some parts of the country, declining house prices. Although weakening, consumer spending has not plunged. From September of 2006 through August of 2007, readings on inflation were generally favorable, with consumer price inflation averaging around 2.3% on a year-over-year basis. But later in the year, energy costs surged, increasing pressures to pass through higher prices for goods and services. The consumer price index for November increased at a year-over-year rate of 4.3%, driven largely by a 21% jump in the energy cost component. Need I say that the financial sector of our economy had an especially rough ride in 2007. You are all quite familiar with the storyline for Wall Street by now, so I'll skip the play-by-play and just provide a few highlights. During the middle months of 2007, a weakening housing sector caused doubts about subprime mortgage-backed securities. Although subprime debt is less than 3% of the total market for dollar debt securities, these concerns triggered a widespread repricing of risk. Credit spreads widened, trading volume plummeted, and at various times bond and money markets froze principally because of concerns about counterparty creditworthiness. Accounting values of positions in subprime and other affected securities caused banks and other institutions to announce sizable losses. Some off-balance sheet positions in structured investment vehicles, so-called SIVs, were brought back onto sponsors' books. Uncertainty about who had what exposure caused illiquidity in interbank markets, and general illiquidity in securities markets kept trading volume low or even non-existent and values depressed. Last year ended with fears about bank funding over year-end, fears regarding the effect of SIV exposure on money market funds, and widespread concern about a credit crunch. It's fair to say financial markets were shaken profoundly between August of last year and year-end, and trading conditions are still far from settled and orderly. For a while, after markets seized up in August, financial conditions, in fact, did improve. And I believe a series of globally coordinated central bank liquidity injections over the final months of the year helped to ease some of the market strains. At meetings in September, October, and December, the FOMC cut the Fed funds rate to forestall some of the adverse effects of financial turmoil on the broader economy. But these actions were not sufficient to remedy Wall Street's distressed conditions. Now, as I prepare for each FOMC meeting, I gather real-time anecdotal economic intelligence from a variety of sources. Among others, I talk to bankers, some hedge fund managers, and other financial market players. Most recently, they have given me the Wall Street perspective. That is, serious concern about further and spreading market deterioration and potential spillover into the broad economy. I also talk to people whose address is Main Street. And from these sources, I get the impression of an economy that is slowing but demonstrating resilience. Having said that, we're at a juncture of heightened uncertainty, to be sure. Looking to 2008, in my view, the pivotal question, the central uncertainty, is the extent of current and future spillover from housing and financial markets to the general economy. The dynamics I am watching, stated simplistically, are first, the effect of dropping house prices on the consumer and in turn on retail sales and other personal expenditure, and second, the effect of financial markets distress on credit availability and in turn on business investment, general business activity, and employment. My base case outlook sees a weak first half of 2008, but one of modest growth, with gradual improvement beginning in the second half and continuing into 2009. This outcome assumes the housing situation doesn't deteriorate more than expected and financial markets stabilize. However, a sober assessment of risks must take account of the possibility of protracted financial market instability together with weakening housing prices, volatile and high energy prices, continued dollar depreciation, and elevated inflation measures following from the recent upticks we've seen. I'm troubled by the elevated level of inflation. Currently, I expect that inflation will moderate in 2008 as projected declines in energy costs have their effect. But the recent upward rebound of oil prices and the reality that they're set in an unpredictable geopolitical context may mean my outlook is too optimistic. Nonetheless, I'm basing my working forecast on this view that inflation pressures will abate. To a large extent, my outlook for this year's economic performance hinges on how financial markets deal with their problems. The coming weeks could be telling. Modern financial markets are an intricate global network of informed trust. Stability will proceed from clearing up the information deficit and restoring well-informed trust in counterparties and confidence in the system overall. To restore market confidence, I believe leading financial firms must recognize and disclose losses based on unimpeachable valuation calculations. They must restore capital and liquidity ratios and urgently execute the strenuous task of updating risk assessments of scores of counterparties. Now, the good news is that markets can return to orderly functioning and financial institutions can be rehabilitated quite quickly. With healthy disclosure, facing up to losses, recapitalization where required, and the resulting clarity, there is hope for this outcome. For monetary policymakers, the overriding concern must be the broad health and balance of the general economy. In my view, recent policy moves appropriately processed information, both data and anecdotes, that painted a mixed but slowing picture. As you know, during our last meeting, December 11th, the FOMC lowered the Fed funds rate 25 basis points to 4.25%. The FOMC began cutting the Fed's funds rate in September, following the announcement in August that the downside risks to growth have increased appreciably. At that point, financial markets were in turmoil, and the Fed funds rate was 5.25%. The decision to lower the Fed funds rate was a response to acute stress in financial markets that had the potential to threaten economic growth. The Fed funds rate, as many of you know, is the foundation of a structure of interest rates mostly set by the market. It's been described as a blunt instrument in its influence over the broad economy over time. And certainly it is not a targeted policy instrument in its capable of reducing illiquidity in specific debt markets, for example, the interbank lending market. For this reason, the Fed, along with foreign central banks, have put in place in recent weeks more targeted facilities to provide liquidity when and where needed. For instance, in December, the Fed announced the Term Auction Facility. With this program, DIs, depository institutions, bid to borrow money from the Fed on a fully collateralized basis. Since participants are bidding for funds, there's none of the usual stigma about turning to the lender of last resort, the Fed's discount window, for liquidity. I've been encouraged by the early results of these auctions and the other efforts by central banks in Europe to keep markets functioning. The future, even in stable times, is hard to read, and at this juncture, the times present even greater uncertainty than usual. The negatives in our economy may be gaining momentum. I think these circumstances call for policymakers to be prepared to respond pragmatically to whatever developments arise. Clearly, adjustments, some quite painful, are underway in housing markets, mortgage markets, and money markets. These adjustments are needed to fix imbalances. This is what markets do, rebalance imbalances. And I believe this process began in 2006, continued in 2007, and needs much of 2008 to play out. I'll be watching the progress of these necessary adjustments very closely as I work with my colleagues to determine the appropriate monetary policy actions. Let me end here. I believe we have some time for questions and comments and dialogue, so I look forward to your comments and questions, and thank you very much.